You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation, and welcome to your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every game, news item, rumor, and more. Thank you for subscribing to Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Himalaya. My name is David Ramil. The Heat have a few days off following their third home loss of the season and second in the last week. Heat Twitter is falling apart. The trade deadline is just a few days away. So much to get a handle on that. So I thought, why not bring on noted Toronto Raptors fan and co-host of the Miami Heat Beat podcast, Giancarlo Navas, to help me make some sense of it all. How are you, man?
I'm doing great. Daily podcast? David, you do this every day?
No, I'm very bad about this. No, my listeners are abandoning ship. First, it was the great mutiny after Wes left, and then everybody obviously recognized that the show was terrible without Wes, and now with me, just, you know, having gone through the move from Gainesville to Miami and covering games every time, and it's just, let me tell you something, it is really hard to record a podcast coming home from the American Airlines Arena at like midnight. Or 12:30, especially when you have a one-year-old toddler. So,
my God. Yeah. That's why Ethan does it at the arena and then makes Alex Toledo tropical.
He's also basically a bachelor at this point, so he can record for as much as he wants. And Alex is Ubering for 5 hours after the games anyway, so that's a whole other story.
Shout out to Alex, man. Alex grinds, man. That guy.
Yeah, that's hardworking. I mean, he's good. He's, he's also asking good questions there. I mean, I know he's got kind of a pseudo-following as far as the post-game presser is concerned, even after Spoelstra kind of eviscerated him during one particular questioning session.
Were you laughing when that happened? Because I was laughing.
No. I had not made the move yet, and I had not been there for that game. Like, I think Spo, he kind of warms up to you because you know how it is. You've got the regulars there, and I don't even think, like, Ethan doesn't necessarily – like, he's a regular for sure. But I don't think, like, you've got
him
Barry
and Eric
Jackson
go back.
There.
Yeah. Him and Spo go back, so.
Yeah. Barry's there. Ira's there. Always.
Anthony. Like,
yeah. You know, Alex. Tim Reynolds for sure.
Who does Athletic have now?
Andre Fernandez.
There you go, because it's not Shandell anymore.
Yeah, he's still there for the.
Oh, he still goes? I'm happy, man. Shandell's a great guy.
Yes. And so even Ira sometimes kind of rubs him the wrong way. Like, he asks questions sometimes and you know, so kind of.
Let me say something. For people who haven't been in that, like, space and, like, covering the team or whatever, man, Ira makes his money, dude. Ira is firing questions and scrums, rat-a-tat-tat. I was like, damn, Ira, tweeting with one hand, recording with the other. I was like, damn, Ira, you go.
Yeah. No, yeah, it's funny. And seeing, like, you know, how Spo starts off every pregame presser with the injury announcements, he's got it all pre-typed out there, his tweet laid out so that he can fire it off. Get that tweet out there 5 seconds before Anthony Chang does.
He's
Tim
great.
Reynolds. Yeah, it's hilarious. So what's your thoughts on the Heat, man? Because, you know, obviously you talk about the team pretty regularly. I have not had a chance to listen to the Heat Beat podcast in some time, but I'm curious as to what you think the state of the Heat is, because, you know, they lose to the Celtics, they lose to the Clippers, Jimmy Butler's struggling from the field. What are your overall thoughts on this team at this point?
So my thing with them since the beginning of the year was the defense was really concerning to me when they were leaking threes. They were allowing an inordinate amount of open shots, especially from the corners. So to kind of borrow from what the Raptors do, the Raptors allow a lot of above the break threes.
Similar, you waited like 3 minutes, man. 3 minutes before.
I know. It's a comp. Because I've noticed that the defenses in the league are trending to allowing threes. The shot profiles are really changing. Weirdly, right? And in the beginning of the season, I was made uncomfortable by it, particularly because the Heat allowed corner threes a lot. And teams were just shooting a low percentage on them while they were open, and I was kind of waiting for that number to even out. And it has lately, but not as much as I thought. What's really, really been bad has been the point of attack defense from the guards. So you have, you know, Nunn kind of regressing a little bit from the beginning of the season as a defender.
I don't think he was ever good as a defender.
I think that maybe we were, at least personally, I was kind of excited for the play, and he was very active, probably not the best at a screen defender, but also he wasn't asked to do as much because Justice was healthy in the beginning of the season, and Justice is, as we know. So I think it's a little more noticeable now. Duncan's getting really, really picked on, especially at the end of games. And Tyler, while he competes, is not there yet. He's still really young. Goran has been really not good on that end, and they've needed him to buoy offense at times. So they're, since December 1st, was a 21st ranked defense. Despite them having good, I think a lot of people on Twitter have complained about the rebounding and everything. They're still first in rebound rate or second or whatever rebound percentage. And if you go by month, they're still top five, right? So like even last this month, where you can say that there have been like, okay, games that you look at that have, maybe you look at rebounding as a concern, they're fourth or fifth in rebound percentage for the month. So it's really been the guard defense for me that I'm concerned about.
So what's the strategy then? Like, if, from your opinion, do you feel like they have to make wide-sweeping changes? Do they have to make tweaks? I think it's just right now the overall thinking, at least from my perspective, is that with a trade deadline away, this is the kind of the defining moment for the Heat season. Like, I think nobody expected. I think I was probably as positive as anybody regarding the Heat's chances.
You really were?
And I didn't think that they were going to be this good. I don't think anybody foresaw this. And now that they're here, they have some crucial decisions to make, and I think the trade deadline is kind of forcing Pat's hand a little bit in the front offices a little bit to decide whether or not they're all in on this season and potentially strengthening their contention chances or just postponing them further and kind of just letting things go the way they are. What would you do in this situation, and what do you think the Heat does?
So I think mortgaging 2021 is off limits. I know some people – I would really like Albert Nahmad to kind of talk more about what Drew Holiday would do for them cap-wise in 2021 because I've heard conflicting things. I've heard people say, yes, they can get Drew and then still have a 21 spot or no. I've heard – and Drew has an option, so it's weird. And he, people say it's like little opt out, but if he gets
hurt – Were you surprised Chris Paul told friend of the show, Rodney Carney, that he would refuse to opt out of that last year?
Of course not. I was like, man, let me tell you something. By the way – for anybody who has not read Rohan's piece on Kobe, I think it's the best thing that Rohan's written, and I think it's one of the five best things written about Kobe, along with Charles Pierce's article, Ramona Shelburne's, Zach Lowe's, and Henry Abbott's. Like, it was that kind of great. It was exceptional. So congratulations to Rohan for writing such a great article, despite it being a really horrible time in a lot of our lives. I don't know what the move is. I've talked a bit about consolidating. Now, I don't think sacrificing 21 is an option for them. I just really don't. I hope they don't. A move that I can see them doing is maybe consolidating Kelly for a wing. I mean, Kelly's still shooting 40% from three, right? Like, I know he hasn't. In our eyes, he may not be his best Kelly Olynyk here in a Miami Heat uniform, but he's a stretch big who can play center, play power forward, and is shooting 40% from three. The teams are going to need that. Like, there's no
he had some good
about.
Performances of late, too. I mean, I mean, ever since he clawed out of the Eric Spoelstra doghouse, which is something I wanted to say for the second segment because there are a couple players that were in that doghouse early in the season. He's been mostly solid. And I think, look, I still think the best version of this Heat team has Kelly kind of unleashed to do what it was that he does best, you know, making plays and shooting. I know he's not the best defender, although I think that's kind of been exaggerated throughout his tenure in Miami just because he's tall and white and has long hair. But, I mean, I know the numbers kind of bear that out, especially this season. But in the past couple of seasons, I don't think he was as bad a defender as people made it out to be because, you know, again, he fits a stereotype, and it was easy to just kind of attach that narrative of him being a poor defender, but I don't think that was necessarily the case.
He was a solid I compared him, I think, a lot to Dirk. Like, where I think the defensive woes were a little overstated with Dirk. I felt Dirk was a very neutral defender. And I think Kelly was kind of in that range. It's like, okay, he's not going to stop. He's not a stopper. He's going to make mistakes. But it's not like he's going to get picked on every single time down the floor and it's going to be, okay, we got to sit this guy.
What game was it recently where he had, like, multiple block shots? Was that against the Magic? Yes, it was. Yes, like, he had two swats in that game. They were actually pretty impressive. And I think that's a conscious decision on his part to know that he has to be more of a factor defensively. That's the only way he's going to get any kind of consistent playing time because of Eric Spoelstra.
I do think that he's the guy that they're most likely to get value for some sort of consolidation, because if he's that nice mid-sized contract, then you can move for a player of consequence.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking on our show about maybe Marcus Morris. I just don't know if the Heat are going to have the juice to get him.
Oh, man.
Like, he would kind of be really, really good on this team. You could even start him. You could probably move Myers to a bench role and figure out your big rotation from there. But if you put Marcus at the four, you can kind of slide Bam back into power forward. You add a shooter who's a good 3-and-D guy. He's going to help their defense a lot, especially with that starting unit, because we don't really know what the status on Winslow is going to be. And I think that's a huge part of whatever move that they make on the deadline, they're going to have information on Winslow's health. And they're going to have to make a decision based on if they think Winslow's going to play or not. Because if Justice plays, then their needs are different. And if Justice doesn't play, then they really, really need to find another point of attack defender.
You seem convinced that they're going to make a move.
I don't. I've always said, like, I kind of have a feeling that they're not. I do think that they're going to call. And I think that if they make a move, it's going to be a small one. I don't think it'll be substantive. Like, I don't think they're going to. Gorin is their ticket to get something good. He has that expiring contract. He has the $19 million, and then you can kind of package a couple things together and get a big contract. And nobody goes past 21. It's perfect. I don't really know who that player is, and I don't really know if they want to cash that chip.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, yeah, I think you're spot on with that, because it's like the talk is. They need a star in order to push the ceiling substantively further and higher than they have or that they currently are standing at. And I don't know that star player is available. I'm not as sold on the Jrue Holiday option as others are.
I'm not big on the move, to be honest. Like, if you look at his numbers, I think that the offense has been buoyed by Jimmy Butler has the highest free throw rate in the league.
Yes, by a wide margin.
Which is shocking. And, David, I don't know if you have these concerns, but going into the playoffs, like, we know those numbers are going to go down. And what is the offense going to look like when they're not getting as many calls?
Yeah, that is an issue. I'm hoping that it balances out with Jimmy's tendency to play larger on a bigger stage. I don't know what's going on with him. I've talked about it, even weeks before the tweaking of the ankle and things of that sort. My feeling was that he was hurt. I just call it an ability to read the room, but seeing him post game in that locker room, he seems like a guy that's beat up and carrying a heavy load and not comfortably doing so in the process. Like, I think, like, he's done great to kind of alleviate concerns about his presence in the locker room and being a good teammate. And I think that still is the case. And I think a lot of his issues in Minnesota and Philadelphia and Chicago were overstated. And I think he's also got to the point where he's more mature as a person and comfortable with his role on this team. But I see him physically in that locker room, and he does not look 100% comfortable. Like, he looks like he's going through some pain there. And I know that's not enough to base any kind of report or anything like that. But and then you kind of see in subsequent games how he does wind up getting hurt. He has a hip soreness. He has an ankle issue. And these things tend to pile up for a guy like him who is as physical as he is and constantly being knocked down to the floor because he draws so many fouls, et cetera. And I just don't know. I mean, in a way, I'm kind of hoping that he does not make the All-Star team just so he can get some additional rest.
We know that's not happening.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I mean... Is he that much of a lock? I don't know.
Jimmy?
Yeah.
No, this is 100% he's a lock. Like, what are you talking about? Who are they going to take over him? Andre Drummond? Bam? Like, he's clearly the all-star over Bam. And if you look at any – Zach Lowe did a really good breakdown of this. I mean, between him and Pascal, like, it's a coin flip. You know what I mean? Jimmy's going to make all NBA this year. What are you talking about, David?
I don't know. I tend to think that, like, the vacuum of Heat fandom or covering the team changes your perspective on things. I don't think it's clear that as
I mean,
black
I've,
and white.
I've been reading a lot of things, like kind of league-wide, and I listen to a lot of national podcasts. Jimmy's 100% a lock. And, like, people who have all NBA votes are all, like, pretty much consensus have mentioned that he's probably going to be second-team all-NBA.
Well, yeah, but you're listening to, I think, I mean, and I don't know the exact discography there as to who you're listening to, but it's those people tend to be a lot more balanced. The other people who have those votes are beat writers that cover, like, the Dallas Morning Star and things of that sort. They're not going to vote for Jimmy Butler. They're going to vote for Luka Doncic. They're going to vote for X player from X team. And that's just – I know that the votes add up cumulatively, but I also tend to think that they're going to vote for – I mean, look at the player voting. And you're supposed to think that the players know best because fans are stupid or whatever. And then that's not nearly any better. Like, I mean, Duncan Robinson got All-Star votes. Chris Silva got All-Star votes, et cetera. I mean, this happens
for the culture, okay? The culture, Chris Silva.
I want to remain balanced. You're right. If pressed, I would say that he's 100% a lock.
Like, if we're being balanced, and if you look, I mean, there's no statistical argument to say otherwise. Like, if we're looking at it balanced outside of the spectrum of Heat Twitter, I mean, the guy is averaging over 27-7 on a good true shooting percentage, has the highest free throw rate in the league. His team was the second seed up until like a week ago. You know what I mean? Like, I don't really see the argument that he wouldn't be a lock.
Do you feel the same way about Bam?
I do feel. I don't. I wouldn't say Bam's a lock, but I'd say Bam's right there under that in the lock territory. Like, we were talking on our show today, like, who do we think is like for sure the locks? And I feel comfortable saying Jimmy's for sure gonna make it. Bam's for sure gonna make it. I think Beal's probably for sure going to make it, considering his numbers. I feel like Middleton and Simmons and Sabonis, and then at that point it's kind of a toss-up. I know that I really like Kyle, but I think Trae Young getting that extra spot at guard kind of makes it complicated, mm-hmm. and Kyle's missed a lot of games. Jimmy's also been remarkably healthy this season, too. That's another kind of aspect to this as well.
Well, we'll get into some more of the top stories of Miami's season in the next segment. You're listening to Locked On Heat. So at least part of the reason why I wanted to bring on the show, and something that we've been trying to plan for a while now, was to discuss Dion Waiters' extended stay in Eric Spoelstra's doghouse and finally getting an opportunity to play in the recent week. What were your overall thoughts on the whole Dion situation? I know you've tweeted out some things, and from his first suspension all the way until, you know, his triumphant return against the Clippers, it's been quite a story arc for Dion this season. I mean, I remember last time I spoke to you on a podcast was on your show, right after I had written that piece for Forbes about Dion's off-season workout regimen and the fact that he had transformed his body, that he had legitimate hopes of being an all-star this season, and it's been anything but that. What are your overall thoughts on Dion and his turbulent season?
Neon Dion, baby. Let's think about the chronology here. Dion Waiters and the Heat had this whole mess about the ankle and the contract and all that. It was not healthy. Comes into camp out of shape, mm-hmm. consistently. All the shots, perceived shots on social media, the attitude stuff, I think we know how the organization feels behind closed doors and even kind of publicly. The suspension, the gummies, the other suspension, the weight stuff. This is all happening. Did we think at any point that it was going to end with Dion Waiters defending Kawhi Leonard down the stretch of an important game, blocking shots, then hitting threes on the other end late in the game, and it nearly working?
Let's think about
what I just said. Like, probably right now, arguably, the one or two most unguardable guys in the league behind Giannis. Steph's not healthy, and Durant's not healthy either. So you have this force of nature that we just saw will a team to a championship by crushing everyone in his way. And little...
You keep finding ways to work the Raptors into every story. That's amazing.
Little stubby Dion Waiters is beating his ass up, well, blocking shots and hitting transition threes. Yeah. Lou Williams, but you know what I mean? Like,
sure.
Eric Spoelstra
called him one of the most unguardable players in the league after
Lou? Lou's amazing. Are you kidding me? This whole time I was talking about skip to my Lou. Not cool. No, dude. I mean, like, he's been out of his mind, like, these last couple games. So the Heat have about 2,200 minutes without Dion. They're +3 net rating. And 42 minutes with Dion. They're plus 16.
He is clearly the team's MVP. I mean,
122 offensive rating, 107 defensive rating. And I think that that 107 defensive rating is something important to look at. I think that their number's around 111, 112 right now for the season. I actually think that 107 matters because I think that he provides that point of attack defense that helps, that he's a better defender than Kendrick Nunn. He's a better defender than Tyler Hero. He's a better defender than Duncan Robinson. He's a better defender than Goran Dragic. And with Justice's future kind of uncertain, I think that we're in the awkward position of they might need him.
I can't disagree with that. I've long maintained that, you know, one of the biggest complaints, I think, from a lot of our listeners and Heat Twitter in general is how the team's depth has resulted in this kind of not just mediocre group of players, but also this kind of nebulous lack of whatever the antithesis of a hierarchy might be. That's what the Heat have been over the last couple seasons, without a clear established star. And I think that now that you have Jimmy there, whether he's struggling or not from the field, he is clearly the alpha in that locker room. And I think it's kind of helped everybody understand their hierarchy, their place in the hierarchy a little bit more effectively. And that's why Bam is thriving, I think, not just because of his skill set, but because something – it has, I think, a lot to do with the attitude and everything else. But the depth on this team, I still think it's a strength, and which is why I have been so resistant – whenever I get questions or people ask about this, about, you know, whether or not the Heat should trade, you're going to rely on guys like Olynyk and Dragic and Waiters at some point throughout the season. So why trade them for a player that doesn't necessarily raise the ceiling that much more high than what you currently have available? Because, you know, they're going to get guys injured throughout some point in the season, and you're going to need these guys to step up.
I think consolidation is going to matter, though. I do think that they're a wing short. Even with Winslow,
how deep did Nick Nurse go in the rotation during the playoffs last year?
Not at all. They went eight deep. They had the starters, and then they had like Fred,
Ibaka.
Norman Powell, and Ibaka, and that was what they ran with. And when Fred was so bad, in that Philly series and I think the first game or two of the Bucks series, it was a legitimate conversation on Raptors Twitter if they should just go seven because it was that bad.
OG didn't play? Was he hurt?
OG was not playing. He was hurt. He was hurt and he had his mother died or he had a loss in the family and he also had an injury. It was a horrific season for him. He's playing really well right now. Now the Raptors' strength is their depth. First, but except they're playing Patrick McCaw an uncomfortable amount of minutes. But
I'm a little surprised you haven't read my piece on OG and Anunoby because
you have a piece on OG?
I have a couple actually.
DM me that. I have some coffee reading tomorrow morning.
Now he is like, have you got a chance to talk to him?
I have not.
Okay.
I've only talked to Kyle and I've talked to Mark.
Yeah. Well, both of who are great. OG is
and Nurse, of course.
He's tough. He is. Consciously so, like in the locker room and you know with his teammates and things like he is much more open, but publicly with media it's difficult. And last year in particular, as he was struggling with his father's unexpected death and how that manifested on the court as he was struggling, and then you know injuries kind of piling up, it was a tough season for him. So but I'm glad he's kind of found a way out of that dark place, but enough Raptors talk.
But in terms of the depth conversation, like I don't think that they're going to need to go 10 deep in the playoffs. And I think realistically, we know that this is not really a finals team. I think we can say that. It's not a bad thing to say that they might not beat a 60-something, 70-win Bucks team. Like, it's not, you know what I mean? It's so slight to them to say that. So it's not like they have to brace themselves for an extra two rounds of the playoffs, right? I think we'd be happy if they get to the second round and if they push a team there. I do think that they're a wing short, and I do think if they want to get to the Eastern Conference Finals, which honestly, I think the second round
isn't Justice Winslow.
Even if they have Justice, I do think that they're short a wing because I'm very out on Derek, and I like Derek, and he's a really good guy, and. I do think that he's improved a lot since he's come into the league, and I know that he credits the Heat a lot for his improvement.
Sure.
I think the lack of shooting is a big deal. And I think the fact that they're incredibly minus with him on the floor, I think they're plus seven with him off, and they're like minus five or something with him on. Pull up the numbers right now. But, you know, it's an issue.
So kind of looping back a little bit there.
So they're plus six with him off, and they're minus two with him off, and seven in almost 800 minutes with him on. So minus two on, plus six off.
So Deion can help, but I'm just kind of curious because, you know, you're plugged in to the locker room somewhat. Did you expect him to have this kind of a return? I mean, I know you asked that of me. Yeah.
No, I didn't. I think knowing, I know that the guys pull for him. Like, I know that they like him. Like,
in the locker room, yes.
Like, they pull for that guy, man. Like,
the coaching staff, no.
The coaching staff, no. But the guys in the locker room, yeah. And I wonder how much of that is Dwayne, because I know Dwayne really goes to bat for him and their boys.
That would be ironic as hell.
Because I know that they're friends.
That's the reason the coaching staff hates Deion.
Yeah. You know, Deion wanted to be here. Wow, I'm sorry. Westbrook just had an unbelievable block on, I don't know who that was, but was it Hassan? I'm very distracted. So they, if Dwayne stays, there's no Deion, there's no 13-11, right? Because they don't have to make all those funky signings, right? If they had retained Dwayne, because there's a whole chapter of Heat history on what that would look like. But yeah, the guys really pull for him, and I know that the coaching staff probably really doesn't, and I know that. I mean, you can even see in games. I mean, what did Deion play? 5 minutes in the Boston, not the Boston game, but the Orlando game. Yeah, it was like nothing. Even in a blowout, like, he didn't really get a lot of time. So,
well, he was part of that run, I think, the Magic run, and I think Spoelstra had concerns about whether or not he was going to be able to keep up defensively, and he got set out, and then the Alex's question actually in the post game presser about the 13-11 team being out there on the floor.
Yeah. Would you like the numbers for the 13-11 lineup? I actually have those up.
How many minutes have they played together?
How many do you think?
Not many.
They've played 8 minutes together.
Yeah.
Their net rating is 49. Oh yeah, baby! Offensive rating 137. Fun stuff, man. Let me tell you, that's 13-11 written all over it.
That was a fun. That covering that season with Locked On Heat, and I remember the first half of that season. God, that was a grind. I don't know.
Awesome.
Yeah, and we were, I think that was our first year of Locked On Heat, or our first, like, start of the season all the way through.
Wait, it was?
I think so, yeah. Because remember, he, we, no, no,
have,
yeah. Cause
have we been around longer than you?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Wes and I worked together in allyoucanheat.com. That's where I met him. And then he was running the site, and I was just kind of contributing to that and, like, 85 other places at the same time. And he was like, oh, you want to record a podcast? And it was the worst thing in the world. It was just us by phone. And then, eventually, I guess we caught the eye of the person to whom it matters, and that's why we became Locked On Heat. And so that was that. So that first season, you know, it was post-Dwayne. I think it was, anyway. I think that's when it was their first season, anyway. Yeah, 2016-17, after Dwayne's departure. And, man, yeah, that 11-30 start was
brutal. Locked On history for us. I did not know. David, I always thought that you were around. Like, I thought you predated us. Brian and I started Heat Beat. Our first show was the LeBron game winner against Indiana, the layup in the Eastern Conference Finals. We did an episode the day after that. That was our first episode. So what was that, 2013?
Yeah, I wasn't even writing at that point.
Yeah, that's when we started iPad in our kitchen. Wow, look at that little piece of Heat Twitter history.
Yeah, Alex said the same thing. He's like, "Oh, I thought you've been around forever." It's like, "No, I'm just old. I haven't. I didn't even realize that this whole world existed." Like, not to get too much into myself, something I'm loath to do, but it's like, I didn't realize that there was that people liked talking about basketball to this extent. I didn't know that people had sites dedicated to basketball. I was absolutely clueless to the whole thing.
David, do you ever stop and think it's like, you know, how I think when when we started, there wasn't really a lot of Heat coverage like that. And kind of when you started as well, like that's kind of when it really started to take off, and how different the media landscape is because of how the bloggers and the podcasters changed how the sport's covered down here.
Yeah.
Have you ever like thought like, and I think it's pretty cool that we have a part in that. That like we were able to kind of give, maybe it's a little too self-indulgent, but like.
But has it been for the positive though? I mean, it just feels like the landscape has changed. Like the quality of writing is always the problem with me. And I mean, I know you do good work and I know you
don't
really.
You're an exceptional writer, so I don't want to hear you speak bad about your writing.
I don't want to hear that, but you know,
Wes is the bad writer. I mean, that's, you know, couldn't hang in South Florida and to run away.
Now he has to do it every day. You know, talking about Eric Pascal's journey to the NBA. And
nobody's
Kai
reading
Coleman.
That. That's what he did it because he knew this team was about to get good. So he went somewhere where he could kind of, you know, hone his writing and hide.
some people have written in that he was the reason for the bad luck during the last couple seasons, and that now that he's joined Golden State. He's jinxed them completely. But, you know, I missed out on the whole Free Darko era. I don't know how much of that you caught. And when Grantland was on its peak and everything else, it just seems like those were the high water marks for sports coverage. And even HardwoodParoxysm.com, to some extent, they were just great. They were putting out such great content. And now it's pivoted completely to, you know, film breakdown and pseudo Zach Lowe's all over the place. And
pseudo Nikias's.
No, Nikias is in another world, though. That's if anybody's going to take over the mantle there, that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. But I just, you know, clicking for slideshows and things of that sort. And I've contributed to that crap. I know how it works. You do what you can to make a little money. But I miss not having been part of that when it was at its peak. And I don't know. Maybe that's gone too far, man. Maybe we've talked a little bit too much about Heat media.
I don't know how the audience is, but I always kind of like going inside stuff like that. I think people enjoy that, like especially because you and I have a different perspective of people who have kind of really come from the bowels of the internet into the locker rooms and how the perspective that we have of that and how media has changed.
Well, you know, my wife always tells me that, you know, like I mentioned, and I asked Jimmy about blah, blah, blah. And he's like, wait, Jimmy Butler? And I'm like, yeah, I've talked to him a bunch before. And she's like, does it blow your mind to think about the fact that you're like in the locker room? And I've been doing this for years, luckily, and that where I can talk to, I mean, I've talked to Dwayne one-on-one. I've talked to Dirk one-on-one. I've talked to like Hall of Famers, legit Hall of Famers.
Talk to Kyle Lowry. It doesn't get much better than that. You know?
No. It does not. And is he a Hall of Fame lock?
Yes.
He is, okay.
I think so. I mean, they let everybody in. He's really good, though, but yeah.
I know. I don't want to knock Lowry.
Not a lock, but I think he'll get in.
Yeah, he's just, look, I mean, he's drafted by Memphis?
Yes.
And then traded to Houston?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, he wasn't much of a fact. Was he there at the same time as Goran? Are they former teammates?
Yes, they played together. And then Goran back to Phoenix.
Because Kyle Lowry was so good?
Kyle was really good. Daryl Morey had an enamorment with Kyle. And then, Kyle, you know, Kyle was almost a Knick. He almost got traded to the Knicks.
I remember that.
That was I'm trying to pull up how many All-NBAs Kyle has because I think it's like we're getting up to five.
Yeah, I would have said five, too.
He's a five-time All-Star, and he's made one All-NBA team. So,
Olympian?
He is not an Olympian.
He wasn't in USA Basketball a couple years ago?
No, actually, that's one of the big things with him, that he hasn't won one. And I think this was the summer that he thought he might be able to, but his hand was all banged up.
Right. Plus, so he went to the finals.
Yeah, he wasn't really able to participate. Five-time All-Star, NBA champion, an All-NBA team. That might be good enough to get you in if we're talking about Sean Marion in the Hall of Fame.
Well, he's not in the Hall of Fame.
But, I mean, people say that he's a Hall of Famer. Which
no,
is,
yeah, I get it.
It senses me.
I think Lowry should be in. I don't think he will be. I don't think he's the first ballot Hall of Famer.
No, he's not for sure enough. Oh, no, wait. He did win a gold medal.
Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah, in 2016. Then who am I thinking about that really wanted to go? Oh, it was J.J. Redick that hasn't won a gold medal that they asked him, but he couldn't go.
Oh, but this past year he blew it off because it was World Championships. You know, and he should have. He should have done it because I don't think he's going to get the invite again. But
yeah, you're we'll at Rio.
Yeah. Joe Harris was J.J. Redick light.
Yeah.
And he did not exactly come through. Anyway, let's move on. We'll get into some more issues about the Heat and how the team is covered, and particularly one player, by the media in the next segment. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Between football season, NBA, and the start of the college basketball season, it's time to get off the sideline and get in on the action with MyBookie. If you're the kind of guy who likes to bet a little to win a lot, try Parlay. For instance, if you like a couple of the big favorites this week, Parlays are perfect because they let you bet multiple games together for a much bigger payout. So if you're going to bet this season, do the smart thing and go to MyBookie.ag because no one gives you more ways to win. If you're tired of watching the games from the couch with nothing to gain, MyBookie wants to get your mind off everything else and back on the game. If you join right now, MyBookie will match your deposit halfway, all the way up to $1,000. That means if you deposit $2,000, you get an extra $1,000 in free money to play with. Just enter the promo code LOCKEDONNBA to activate the offer. Once again, that's promo code LOCKEDONNBA to take advantage of MyBookie's generous sign-up offer. Visit MyBookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. Remember to listen to and subscribe to new and archived episodes of Locked On Heat on Himalaya, as well as on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you're on iTunes, please leave a rating and review, especially if it's a good one. And I think this is ultimately the reason why you're on this show, is because you've been a very, I wouldn't say staunch critic, but you have certainly not shied away from how Kendrick Nunn is covered by fans and the media surrounding the Heat in particular. And I think it's a really fascinating conversation, one that I find myself conflicted by, especially in the light of what happened this past weekend and the death of Kobe Bryant and how the story regarding Bryant has changed so completely, not just as a result of his death, but over the course of the second half of his career, maybe even going back further than that. Like, you know, he was an accused rapist in 2003, and I don't think it's wrong, I think, to overlook it. And I know a lot of the conversation is, well, he just passed away tragically, and, you know, the fact that he was aboard a helicopter with his daughter and several other family members, and that certainly puts a shroud on how you discuss the Kobe Bryant situation. But I think it's one that a lot of people have been very clear about wanting to point out. Maybe that's wrong. I don't know. I don't think there's any clear answer there. I think people have kind of tried to walk that line a little bit, and it's important to kind of, I think, to mention it at least in passing. You can overlook it, or you can at least say that it happened, though. I think it's important to acknowledge, because it's the totality of who he was as a person, and it's part of his past. Whatever happened, whatever really happened, whatever the end result was, whatever, you know, case was settled or not, the reality is that there's something happened, and there was a victim involved who probably does not feel any kind of sense of justice, especially now that he's passed away. And, you know, we're talking about something similarly regarding Kendrick, and, you know, he's a guy that I've spoken to, you know, one-on-one. He does not come across as a bad person, nor did Kobe. And I know that you certainly wanted to talk about how Kendrick is covered and why it's an uncomfortable situation for you. And I wanted to get your overall thoughts on it, because I've gotten a lot of criticism for pointing out what happened in Kendrick's past, you know, and I still think it's important to do so. Again, just as I mentioned to Kobe, and that's part of the problem, is that you can't mention the fact that these people did these things. James Johnson was involved in a battery situation. I mean, yep. I've been mostly positive about James throughout his Heat tenure. I enjoy talking to him in the locker room, and I'm conflicted by it every time because I know that this is part of his past.
There's no right answer. I think with the Kobe stuff, and we talked a little bit about this on Heat Beat, there's an element of, you know, and maybe it's us trying to better the story to make us feel better at the end, but a lot of women in sports have talked really glowingly about Kobe, and I haven't heard anybody say a bad thing about him that's a woman. And I do think that that matters to an extent. And Kobe never really paid his consequences for what happened in Colorado. He really never faced any consequences. None. I mean, none at all. I mean, he's the most popular basketball player, right? Like, outside of Michael Jordan, that arguably he was the most popular basketball player. He got all his contracts, all his money. Like, he didn't really face a lot of negative publicity. So Kobe really never had to answer for what happened. But I do think that in his later years, he really, maybe I think of it this way, but in a way tried to correct his wrongs that he never really answered for, which by being such an advocate for women, for women's rights in terms of the women's national team, how behind Sidney LaRue he was. Naomi Osaka was tweeting and talking about how Kobe would check in on her because he knew how bad her mental health was. Ramona Shelburne talked about Kobe checking in on her during her pregnancy, right? So this Candace Parker was vocal about it as well. So like, there's a lot of women, and that's not insignificant. The voice that matters the most, of course, is the victim in all of this. But I don't think that that's insignificant either, that later on this is the kind of person he was. And when we apply it to Kendrick, the thing that makes me uncomfortable with Kendrick is the way that it's, his story is framed. It's framed as a redemption story, or that they look at him as an unheralding success, as a diamond in the rough who was undrafted, and look how good he's playing. And in part, a big reason why he was undrafted was because of the domestic abuse charge that he pled guilty to 2. And that's not mentioned ever. And when I tweet it, every time I've mentioned it, and I don't mention it a lot because I don't think it's – I don't want to beat the drum over and over again every single day that Kendrick Nunn dribbles the ball half court. I'm not going to remind everybody, but every once in a while when I do bring it up, I get a few people I may mention saying, I did not know this. And they learn about it because nobody talks about it. And the way he's covered by the team, by the broadcast crew, by, you know, you don't have to bring it up in a broadcast. I don't expect the team to do that, right? It's like, what are you going to do? You're going to start talking about how you have a convicted, you know what I mean? But the way that you frame it as a cute, cuddly success story, you know, that makes me uncomfortable. And especially more neutral parties like ESPN and Turner and all that, they're doing it too. NBA TV, all these people are doing it. And writers on other national NBA podcasts and stuff like that. I think Sam Vecenie is like one of the only national people that have really talked about it. And that's my big issue with it. I'm not saying to kick him out of the league. I'm not saying any of that. I'm not even having a discussion on his character, because to me, like, there's not really much to say there. But the way that the media has handled it and the way that his story gets propagated as this undrafted success story of, look, mm-hmm. he was undrafted, how could teams pass him up? That's the part that I don't like.
And I think that's been somewhat historic in coverage of the league. Like, I mean, at least recently, I can think of, you know, Lance Stephenson being covered that way. Yep. Lance Stephenson who dragged his girlfriend down the stairs by her hair. And, oh, that's just Lance, make him dance, you know. Lance doing his thing, Lance blowing LeBron's ear, you know. Lance in China, putting up 50 points, whatever. I mean, that's, like, fuck Lance Stephenson. Like, I'm sorry.
Darren Collison's another guy.
Yeah, he's coming back.
They're talking about him being a savior.
He's going to be a hell of a story. If he joins the Lakers and they win a championship, he'll be covered, not unironically, the same way Jason Kidd was so beautifully in 2011, despite the fact that Jason Kidd punched his wife.
Isn't Jason Kidd on that coaching staff?
Jason Kidd went in 2011? Oh, what?
No, I'm sorry. Coaching staff
you're
right.
Now? Oh, you're right. He'll win his second ring as a coach this time around. But yeah, in 2011, not only was it the fact that the Heat were losing.
Wow, way to remind me that he got a second ring. I was like, when was the first ring? And it all hit me, David.
Yeah. But yeah, but that story too is like Jason Kidd, venerable veteran, has gone through so much. It's like, yeah, he punched his wife Jumana over an argument that they had.
Derrick Rose is another person who, by the way, that trial was incredibly public, and those details are incredibly available for anybody who wants to read them. And if you follow that trial in this age like I did, and you read the details, you know, it's incredibly uncomfortable, and the fact that he got off innocent was mind-blowing considering the way that the judge acted afterward toward him and the jury were fans of his and all that. So let's not forget that. And that's another guy the Lakers are targeting that they're linked to in rumors, Kuzma for Derrick Rose swap. And
It's a conflict, and I don't. Again, there is no resolution to this. There's no way to sweep these things out from under the rug, nor is there any way to perfectly excuse them. And I can almost hear the internet yelling at us saying, "Well, these people have done their time. These people have paid their dues."
But I get that with Kendrick. I get that with Kendrick a lot.
It's like, what dues did he pay? That he's not getting paid $10 million a year because he wasn't a top 10 pick in the NBA draft? I mean, that's yes. I guess.
And we're not lynching these guys. We're just bringing up, a talking point of, hey, like don't frame a narrative this way. Derrick Rose is another guy that gets the redemption stuff. I don't like.
Deion
Waiters is a redemption story who I think anybody close to Deion can kind of see that, he's gone through a lot personally, struggling with losing a part of him, the game that was taken away from him, that he looks depressed and all that. Like, that's redemption. What he did on Friday against the Clippers, that's a true redemption story about basketball and about humanity. Like, the idea of Derrick Rose going through redemption after he got, like, what?
And I'm glad you brought that up because, again, I think you did mention something about that in contrast to how Kendrick is covered, and it's like, you're right. Like, Deion, I am regularly vilified for trying to be positive about Deion Waiters and his role on the team and everything else, and that I kind of cast the team somewhat negatively regarding the way they've handled that situation because I think they've done them dirty, to be 100% honest with you, and it's not 100% their fault. Deion does play a part to blame for this,
of course,
but I think the reality is that he was dealt a bad hand and he handled it the only way he knows how. He wanted to take it out on the team. He wanted to take it out on the court. He wanted to play, and he was robbed of the one thing that's defined him for decades. You can't change that. Like, we're talking about, like, our recent forays into NBA media, and that's just as much a part of what defines me as almost anything else in reality. And like, think about what Deion's done. He's been playing basketball. That's been the sum total of his focus for decades. And to have that taken away for whatever, problems the team and coaching staff might have with you is kind of ridiculous to me. And for him to be as regularly vilified because, he's fat, because he's depressed, because he's a malcontent, because all these ridiculous narratives that get woven into his story, I cannot stand that. I've had such a hard time handling that. And then, again, in contrast to the glorious redemption story of player X is very, very interesting in how. But even that shift of focus, like when there's a player lockout or when the way that we side with billionaires over millionaires and things of that sort, how we identify with labor, it's mind-boggling to me.
David, think about how fans felt about Hassan.
Sure.
What did Hassan actually do wrong? Like, did Hassan ever get in trouble?
No.
Hassan never do anything. No, dude. And for all accounts, Hassan was a guy that would play video games at home and watch TV and make stupid vines that I missed, by the way. So jealous Portland gets them all. Hassan's biggest crime was getting mad that he would sit in the fourth quarter. So his biggest crime was getting upset that he couldn't be on the floor.
Maybe you're right. I mean, certainly Wes and I were very negative about Hassan and his sulking behavior and maybe we should have had a more open mind about it. I mean, I also have a problem with the fact that he bought, a gold machine assault rifle and left it in his car unlocked.
Classic.
Yeah. Am I botching the details of the story? Because I think it was something along those lines. Right?
No, yeah, he got it stolen. I was also confusing Ryan Tannehill's wife. We had that's not the first stolen assault rifle from a car.
Oh, Ryan Tannehill's wife?
No. They returned a rental car with an assault rifle. Excuse me. My bad.
Oh, so it's just one they own, and they're like, oh, that's...
They left it in a rental car when they returned it. Yes, that's what it was. I'm sorry. Miami has too many assault rifle athlete stories in cars.
Ryan Tannehill. Okay. Interesting. Yeah. His wife. Oh, that's even better. I mean...
It's cool.
Have you... Yeah, Brian lives in Orlando, right? And so... Have you driven up to Orlando lately?
the last time I was in Orlando was for USA Panama in what I believe was a clincher to getting them into the World Cup, because sure. all they had left was Trinidad and Tobago.
So
and
was
boy,
like?
David, was I wrong.
So that was what, like that was, 2 years ago?
Yes.
So did you happen to see the bevy of billboards along the turnpike advertising babes with guns?
No.
It's almost like a bad parody, but then again, a lot of what Orlando is bad parody.
A lot
parody.
Of Florida in general.
Yeah, sure. No, that's fair. But yeah, the billboards with women in bikinis and advertising, you know, come get the feel of hot lead, you know, things of that sort. It's kind of ridiculous. But yeah, sorry. That Tannehill story certainly reminded me of that. Right. We've gone off the rails here, as is the norm. Especially
No,
it's okay, man. You know, it's not just that. Now that I'm kind of recording a show on my own, it's you introduce a new voice to the whole podcast, and you kind of find yourself going off on tangents there. Wes was always the one who kind of kept us in line and kept us focused, and now with him gone, it's been a whole different adventure for our listeners here. But hopefully, I know they're still listening, because somehow, some way, our numbers are better than ever. But I know. Wes called it the Patrick Ewing theory, but I'm not sure if that's it.
Yeah, I like it. Is Wes calling himself Ewing? Is that what he's doing?
Yeah. I was like, wait a minute. What does that make me?
Yeah, I had the same reaction. I was like, oh, look at that. Wait, what?
But anyway, thank you so much, John, for Johnny. Johnny? John? I don't know why I called you John.
Listen, my best friends of to be honest, it's Giancarlo, because it's Italian, but sure. People can't, you know, people go Gianni, that's kind of the short for Giancarlo. My friends can't say that. I get called G, Johnny, Gian, whatever. I don't care, man. Whatever floats your boat.
All right. Giancarlo, thank you so much for being part of the show. We always appreciate work. Tell my listeners, not that they don't know already, where they can find you on Twitter and where they can find all your great work.
You can find my bad, horrible takes at GNavas103, where tonight at 3:30 a.m. I will be trying to watch Federer play Djokovic. And, love me some Roger. You can find Raptor tweets and some occasional Heat stuff, mostly Heat stuff.
Anime, not as much as you used to.
No, anime is over at Subtitled Anime. I made it my own anime account because Heat Twitter bullied me out of tweeting anime. I have a YouTube channel too. Check that out.
All right, you got a lot of different sources out there.
Let me tell you something, man. Content creation, okay? It's exhausting. And also check us out at MIA Heat Beat for the latest podcast. We actually have a new video. Our Brass Jazz and Leif wrote and produced a song, Bucket Bros Time, parodying Post Malone, singing about Jimmy Butler and Tyler Hero. I made the music video, and you should check it out because it's fun stuff. Sure. And I really want to tell your listeners, because I know you don't like to talk about yourself.
Yeah.
You know, David's a really good guy, man. David will, like, DM me to check in how my career is going and stuff like that. David's awesome, man. Like, he's such a good guy. And I was actually talking to Alex before I came on, and we were just saying, like, what a great guy you are. So, dude, thank you for always being you. And to your listeners, like, you know, this guy's awesome. And anytime David wants me on, I'm here. Whether it's after my yoga or whatever, I will make time.
Well, I appreciate that, man. And I know you'll be back in that Heat locker room soon, even if it's just to cover the rafters, right? But I'm sure.
All I want, to be honest with you.
April 14th, last game of the regular season.
You know I'm there, man. Shoot around, gonna ask you.
All right. Again, thanks. Check out Johnny's work. But that's it for today. You can connect with me on Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat or email me at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. I'm David Ramil, signing off, and thanking you, as always, for your support. Yeah!